Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
As spring 2020 unfolded, a silent enemy spread across the globe. COVID-19 forced humanity into an unprecedented retreat. Streets empty, businesses shut down, isolation became a way of life. Fear spread as quickly as the virus itself, as families were separated, left to wait, hope, and worry. In those uncertain days, a single text, "I have COVID," carried enormous weight. It wasn't just a warning. Sometimes, it was a goodbye. With strict hospital protocols in place, loved ones couldn't visit. They couldn't hold a hand or whisper a final word. All they could do was wait for updates, if any came at all. For one man in Jupiter, Florida, that fear became a weapon. While the world grieved its losses, he saw opportunity, a perfect cover. Because as he soon realized, isolation could hide more than a virus. It could also hide a murder. When 51-year-old Gretchen Anthony texted her family saying she tested positive, it seemed believable at first. Her updates grew more alarming, concerning, then dire, then urgent. And then, nothing. Silence. That silence left her family with one haunting question. If Gretchen really was that sick, why hadn't she called? Was it really her on the other end of those messages, or someone else typing and lying? What became a concern for her mother's health would spiral into a multi-state manhunt, and the discovery of a plan so cold, so calculated, it almost worked. Join me now as we examine the case of Gretchen Anthony, a woman whose final words may not have been her own, and a killer who used a global crisis to cloak his crime in sympathy and send text messages from the dead. Jupiter, Florida sits quietly along the Atlantic coast, a sun-drenched town that looks like it was pulled straight from a postcard. Not the kind of place you'd go for spring break chaos. Jupiter draws a different crowd. Championship golf courses, top-rated schools, wide beachfront homes where the sand feels soft enough to sift through your fingers. With a population just shy of 60,000 and one of the lowest crime rates in the state, Jupiter radiates small-town charm and where people come to slow down, raise families, or start over. That's what drew Gretchen Anthony. The year-round beach life, especially paddleboarding, fit perfectly with her active, outdoorsy lifestyle. Gretchen Anthony was born in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, on January 8, 1969, but spent most of her childhood in West Long Branch, New Jersey, growing up with her twin brother and her younger sister. After high school, she moved to New York to study fashion, an exciting time for her, but something didn't sit right. Eventually, she changed course, trading design sketchbooks for textbooks, pursuing a degree in education. She later returned to New Jersey to teach for a time before making a bigger move, this time to Florida. In Jupiter, Gretchen found her perfect fit. Health conscious and fitness focused, she thrived on the coastal lifestyle, paddleboarding, yoga, beach days, and an active routine that kept her vibrant and strong. For a while, she continued working in education, teaching at private schools before transitioning into human resources at a utility company. But no matter where she went, people always noticed her energy, because when Gretchen showed up, she motivated others and made her presence felt. In time, she married Jeff Dreyer, and together they had a daughter. Even after the marriage ended, they remained united as parents, co-parenting with respect and keeping their daughter at the center of their lives. As a single mom, Gretchen poured her energy into raising her child and building a life filled with health, friendship, and stability. She was happy, grounded, and hopeful about the future. But in 2015, her path crossed with a man who would alter her future forever, David Anthony. David Anthony, already hiding behind a name that wasn't his real one, was impossible to miss. At 6'7", with an athletic frame and a confident presence, he drew attention without even trying. Born and raised in West Palm Beach, Florida, David had once played college basketball, but in adulthood, he found a new stage as a personal trainer at an Orange Theory fitness studio in Jupiter. Clients described him as high energy and magnetic, a trainer who pushed people hard, but who remembered their names, their goals, their stories. Orange Theory is one of those high-octane fitness franchises where the music pounds, the workouts leave you drenched, and the trainers feel part coach, part cheerleader, part therapist, an environment David thrived in. And it's also where he first met Gretchen Anthony, a connection that was immediate. David was the kind of trainer people noticed, tall, confident, and magnetic. Gretchen, vibrant and health-focused, matched his energy in every way. When they met, the attraction was immediate. Their connection didn't build slowly. It clicked, undeniable from the start. David seemed like everything she wanted: successful, attractive, devoted to fitness, and attentive to her daughter Ava. By the end of 2014, they were engaged. In 2015, they flew to Las Vegas and exchanged vows at a 24-hour chapel. And for a while, it really did look like a fairy tale. Friends saw them as a power couple, the doting stepfather, the radiant wife, the blended family that seemed to have it all. But fairy tales, as we know, can be the perfect disguise, and David Anthony wasn't who he claimed to be. For a while, the illusion held, but not long into the marriage, Gretchen began noticing red flags. At first, they were subtle, little shifts in behavior, but over time, they escalated. David had a way of becoming whoever people needed him to be. His tough, confident exterior seemed to balance Gretchen's warmth and optimism, but as the marriage progressed, cracks started to show. The charismatic trainer was actually deeply insecure, increasingly possessive, and most alarming, he'd been lying about the most basic thing of all: who he really was. David Anthony wasn't just a new name, it was a new identity. Before moving to Jupiter, he legally changed his name to distance himself from a criminal past that included arrests and a conviction for armed robbery. That robbery back in 2000 involved a squirt gun pointed at a Blockbuster clerk. It might sound absurd now, but there was nothing funny about the threat. The weapon may have been fake, but the intent was very real. His record also included assaulting law enforcement officers and being fired from jobs because of unstable behavior. Relatives later revealed that David had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but instead of seeking help, he avoided medication and rejected therapy. Friends and coworkers began noticing the signs: sudden mood swings, paranoia, and need to control. The marriage became so strained in the early years that they decided to attend a week-long retreat in Hawaii, a last-ditch effort to save their relationship. But David's behavior during the retreat became so disruptive, he had to be separated from the group. Even in a therapeutic setting, he couldn't keep up the facade. Then, in spring of 2017, something happened that would make things even worse. David was working on his truck in the garage when the jack slipped. The vehicle came down on him, hard, causing a traumatic brain injury. For weeks, Gretchen became his caregiver, but as his physical wounds healed, his behavior deteriorated. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I want my wardrobe to be simple. Stuff that looks sharp, feels good, and things I actually wear. For me, that's Quince. And the bonus? Quince pieces make great gifts too. This season's lineup is simple but smart and easy with Quince. $50 Mongolian cashmere sweaters that feel like an everyday luxury, and wool coats that are equal parts stylish and durable. Their denim nails the fit and everyday comfort, all at the fraction of what you'd expect to pay. By partnering directly with ethical factories and top artisans, Quince cuts out the middleman to deliver premium quality at half the cost of other high-end brands. So you can give luxury quality pieces without the luxury price tag. So with the holidays coming up, I've got my eye on this soft-shell, fleece-lined full-zip jacket. It'll be perfect for when I go to the gym and it's cold outside. Plus, I could probably get a couple extra rides on my bike with it when it's cold out, before it snows. So while I am gonna add it to my gift list, I'm not sure I can wait. Quince has gifting covered beyond clothing too. They have everything from home, bath, kitchen, or travel for you to share this holiday or to keep. Give and get timeless holiday staples that last this season with Quince. Go to quince.com/madness for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/madness. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/madness. By late 2019, David's moods were darker, more volatile. Gretchen confided in friends she didn't feel safe at home anymore, and started hiding a kitchen knife under her pillow, waiting for David to fall asleep each night before she went to sleep herself. In messages to friends, she hinted at the fear that haunted her daily, writing, "I gleaned a hint of that crazy look in his eyes." At work, things weren't any better. David's behavior at Orange Theory was growing more erratic. His boss, Tabitha Hopkins, later described David as having two sides, one motivated and upbeat, the other paranoid and draining. She fired him once in 2017, but gave him another chance. But by early 2020, she couldn't ignore his behavior any longer. The final straw came after the death of Kobe Bryant, David's basketball idol, and even the namesake of his dog. He showed up at the gym in tears, delivered a rambling speech in the lobby, and left clients unsettled. This time, Tabitha just didn't fire him. She called Gretchen directly and warned her. Gretchen's response was blunt: "David is crazy." But the most chilling moment came weeks earlier, just before Christmas 2019. While going through David's backpack, Gretchen discovered her most important belongings tucked inside. Her wedding ring, passport, driver's license, credit cards, and cash. The items that gave her independence, her identity, had been quietly taken away. This wasn't random. It was methodical. This was control, stripped down to its most frightening form. Without ID, Gretchen couldn't travel. Without credit cards, she had no access to money. Without a passport, she couldn't escape, even in an emergency. It was a textbook pattern of coercive control, designed to make leaving nearly impossible. That discovery frightened Gretchen enough that she immediately contacted a friend, telling her she was afraid of her own husband. That's when she decided she'd had enough. In January 2020, Gretchen found the courage to do what so many abuse victims struggled to do. She left. She asked David to move out of their townhouse and then changed the locks. And on February 28, 2020, they both filed for divorce. For the first time in years, Gretchen could finally sleep without a knife under her pillow, and she thought the worst was behind her. She thought she was free. She wasn't. David Anthony did not take the separation well. After Gretchen asked him to leave, he moved in with his mother. By then, his grasp on reality was already slipping. He'd lost his job, his marriage was over, and now he was glued to the news, watching reports of a mysterious virus spreading out of China. For most people, the headlines were unsettling. For David, they were apocalyptic. To someone already unstable, COVID-19 wasn't just a health crisis. It was the collapse of civilization, Armageddon, a chance to escape the chaos, if only Gretchen would go with him. But Gretchen wanted nothing to do with him. David called, texted, and pleaded, trying to convince her to leave everything behind and flee with him to Costa Rica. But Gretchen had moved on. She was rebuilding her life, free from the fear and control that had defined their marriage. She told him clearly she didn't want contact, but David didn't stop. Her rejection wasn't just painful. It was intolerable to his fragile ego. And in David's mind, if Gretchen wouldn't let him save her, then maybe she didn't deserve to be saved at all. Then, in March 2020, just a week before Gretchen's disappearance, police were called to a shopping plaza. There'd been reports of a man acting suspiciously around a group of teenage girls. That man was David Anthony. When officers approached, he lashed out, slamming a car door on one of the officers' arms. He was arrested and charged with resisting arrest with violence. After several days in jail, David posted a $3,000 bond and was released on March 18th. 3 days later, Gretchen Anthony would be reported missing. The threat David had been building toward for months was now about to be realized. If Gretchen wouldn't come willingly, he would make sure she never had the choice to refuse him again. March 20th, 2020 was a Friday evening. Gretchen Anthony wrapped up her workday at the utility company in good spirits, ready for a quiet weekend of yoga, paddleboarding, and some peace in her new life. But by Monday, everything had changed. On March 23rd, her family and friends began receiving text messages from Gretchen's phone. Messages that at first caused concern, then spiraled into fear. The first message seemed concerning but believable. "Good morning. Tested positive for coronavirus earlier this morning. That means I have to stay here for at least 2 weeks." In the chaos of March 2020, with hospitals overwhelmed and guidelines changing daily, a message like that was unsettling, but not unusual. Then more texts followed. Over the next 2 days, Gretchen's contacts received a series of follow-up messages. Gretchen wrote that her condition was worsening, that she had checked into Jupiter Medical Center with an acute case. Then, she texted she was being transferred to a CDC-approved facility in Belglade. Finally, she claimed doctors might have to place her in a medically induced coma. But if Gretchen was so sick, why hadn't she called? She was someone who stayed close to her family, especially her daughter. Even if she was sick, even if she was scared, wouldn't she want to hear their voices? Among those who received the text was her ex-husband, Jeff Dreyer, the father of her daughter. Jeff knew Gretchen better than almost anyone, and immediately he sensed something was off. The grammar was wrong. The punctuation wasn't hers. Abbreviations appeared that Gretchen never used. But it was more than just tone. The style of writing felt familiar. Jeff had seen it before. It didn't sound like Gretchen. It sounded like David Anthony. So Jeff went straight to authorities, telling them what he believed. The texts were fake, and something had already happened to Gretchen.
Found out from a dear friend who's a physician that firstly, they don't ship anybody off-site, right. Transport anybody off-site.
Right.
There is no CDC or coronavirus test port facility, and any patients that are presenting signs of coronavirus are treated at the hospital. That seemed awfully fishy to me, you know, and this, I was smelling rats left and right.
Jeff wasn't the only one who started smelling rats. When Gretchen's family called Jupiter Medical Center to check in on her, there was no record of her ever being admitted. And the so-called CDC facility in Belglade, the one mentioned in the texts, didn't even exist. By March 26th, her family filed an official missing persons report. And by then, police already suspected they weren't dealing with a woman in quarantine. They were looking for something far more serious. That suspicion only deepened when officers arrived at Gretchen's townhouse on Sunshine Drive. Almost immediately, they found cause for alarm. A neighbor came forward with chilling information. She told investigators that on the morning of March 21st, between 6 and 6:30 a.m., she had heard disturbing sounds coming from Gretchen's home.
Because on Saturday morning, I guess it was Saturday because of the pictures, but I heard, I was asleep upstairs in my room, and I heard a really serious woman scream, just screaming, like she was being attacked. And then I heard her scream, no, and then I heard something about it hurts, stop it. The screaming was... It went on for a few minutes.
Okay.
It wasn't like, that's why I thought maybe it was kids, but there wasn't anybody. Nobody was yelling help. Nobody was yelling help, which is why I didn't call the police.
When the neighbor stepped outside to investigate, she saw a black Nissan truck backed into Gretchen's driveway, and it still had the engine running. And she was smart. She took photos. Photos of the truck and the license plate. Police later confirmed it was David Anthony's vehicle. But despite the screams, despite the strange activity, the neighbor never called 911. She later admitted she felt unsure, confused by what she was hearing. Then the screaming stopped and she let it go. When police entered Gretchen's home on Sunshine Drive, they were hit immediately by the smell of bleach. Signs of a violent struggle were everywhere. Blood-stained towels, still damp, inside the washing machine. In the garage, the door had been barricaded from the inside, a key snapped off in the lock to block anyone from entering. When officers forced it open, they found more bleach and large stains soaked deep into the concrete. It was clear someone had tried to erase what had happened, but the evidence was still there, and it pointed toward the unthinkable. Then, detectives spotted something crucial, security cameras. After separating from David, Gretchen had installed the surveillance system as protection, fearing he might return. But now, every camera was gone, ripped out, wires dangling. Whoever removed them thought they'd erase the evidence. But in 2020, most home security systems backed up automatically to the cloud, which meant the footage might still exist. But the trail didn't end at Gretchen's house. On March 24th, security footage from the Jupiter Medical Center showed David Anthony pulling into a parking lot behind the wheel of Gretchen's Mini Cooper. Inside the abandoned car, police found her purse and blood on the steering wheel and the gear shift. The next stop was David's mother's house, where he'd been staying since the separation. When officers knocked, she answered the door, visibly shaken, and she confirmed what police already suspected.
Jupiter Police. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Jupiter Police. Sorry to bother you.
Yeah.
Is David home?
No.
Okay. Are you his
mother?
Okay. All right. We're just trying to get in touch with him. It's involving his wife. I think they're separated, Gretchen.
Right.
Okay. Have you heard from David recently?
No.
Is he staying here?
No. I say that because Gretchen's been in touch with me because she's in the CDC center. She has the virus.
He was just says he was going to Costa Rica because the virus was like invading the country.
Why, what's going on? You're scaring me.
On March 24th, David packed up his truck and disappeared. Investigators were left with two urgent questions. Was he fleeing to Costa Rica, still chasing his fantasy of escape? And more critically, was Gretchen with him? Or had David already done the unthinkable and was now running alone? What followed was a multi-state manhunt spanning more than a week and stretching across the southern United States. Using cell phone data, detectives began tracing David's movements, and the digital trail was damning. David's phone and Gretchen's phone were pinging off the same towers, moving together in tandem, away from Jupiter. Two phones that were supposedly separated by quarantine were now crossing state lines together. On March 25th, Gretchen's phone pinged in Pensacola, Florida. Around the same time, surveillance cameras caught a tall man matching David's description at a local pawn shop. He was trying to sell women's jewelry, including a distinctive David Yurman ring. Friends later confirmed it belonged to Gretchen. The trail pressed on, mile after mile. Next, David's phone pinged in Pecos, Texas on March 27th, then again on the following day in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Florida authorities alerted police in Las Cruces, providing them with the description of David's truck. It didn't take long before officers spotted the truck and pulled David over.
Go ahead and get your hands off the vehicle, please. Hands off the vehicle. Get your hands up.
Hands up.
Hands up so I can see them.
Right now you're being detained for an investigation that's going on in Florida, okay? That's all I know. That's all I can tell you. You're not going to leave here until you talk to some detectives that are on their way.
All right, so this is about your wife. Okay, I guess she's been reported missing.
Last I heard, she was in a CDC facility getting treatment for coronavirus.
And see, what makes you believe that?
Our sister texted it to you.
Well, where's the CDC place at?
She didn't mention that.
Have you had any contact with her since?
No.
No text message or phone calls? Where does she live at?
She lives in Jupiter.
In Jupiter? Do you live with her?
No. Because when we talked, she mentioned, like, I don't know how much I can share without, like, you know what I mean? Like, she mentioned being in trouble.
When officers stopped David, he didn't resist. Instead, he spoke in half answers, hinting that Gretchen might be in some kind of trouble, but offering nothing concrete. His words were cryptic, evasive, and ultimately useless. What was clear, though, was that Gretchen wasn't with him. After securing a search warrant on the truck and taking custody of the vehicle, they searched it, and what they found inside would prove critical. David's truck was packed with evidence, tangible links tying him to Gretchen's disappearance. Among the items recovered was Gretchen's cell phone and the missing security cameras from her home. But there was one problem. At that point, investigators didn't have an arrest warrant, which meant, despite everything they'd seen, David Anthony was allowed to walk away. Back in Jupiter, investigators accessed Gretchen's cloud-based security footage, and what they found played out like a horror film, only it wasn't fiction. The footage began in the early morning darkness of March 21st. The patio camera showed a tall figure lurking outside Gretchen's home, moving slowly through the shadows. He lingered on the porch for a long time, waiting, watching, planning. It's unclear whether Gretchen knew he was there, or if she simply opened the door, unaware of what waited for her on the other side. When she finally answered, the figure positioned himself behind the door, a calculated move that gave him the element of surprise. Dressed head to toe in black, he was clearly trying to avoid detection. What happened next was so graphic, some of the footage has never been released. Cameras capture the figure dragging Gretchen toward the garage, muffling her screams. The same garage where investigators later found a broken key jammed in the lock, meant to keep anyone out. Inside the garage, the footage showed what appeared to be Gretchen's head as she lay motionless on the floor. The tall man in black paced around her body. And then came the moment that sealed his fate. One camera caught him turning toward the lens, the face unmistakable, David Anthony. The footage also showed David trying to cover his tracks. At one point, he looked directly at the camera before ripping it down and tossing it aside, unaware that the footage had already been uploaded to the cloud. And that was enough to secure an arrest warrant. But before police could act, Detective Jared Kennerson's phone rang. The caller, David Anthony himself. Even with the overwhelming evidence stacked against him, David couldn't stop lying. He knew the COVID story wouldn't hold, so he spun a new one.
I spoke with Gretchen today.
You spoke with Gretchen today?
She's prepared a statement to give to you.
Okay.
Gretchen is receiving treatment for the COVID virus. Before she contacted the virus, she uncovered illegal federal tax fraud. She's in communication with OSHA and the Office of Special Counsel as she prepares her whistleblower case. Gretchen's terrified for her life. Someone was sent to her house to hurt her the other weekend.
According to David's latest fabrication, Gretchen hadn't died. She'd gone into hiding. He told detectives she was a whistleblower, running from shadowy figures in a tax fraud scandal who wanted her silenced. It was a desperate gambit, another lie from a man who knew the walls were closing in on him. David was stalling, muddying the waters while pressing toward what investigators believed was his ultimate goal, escaping to South America. But time was running out. On March 31st, 2020, in Las Cruces, New Mexico, the manhunt ended. At an intersection off Hickory Drive, police spotted a tall man walking a husky. It was David Anthony, nearly 2,000 miles from Jupiter, still moving west with his dog, Kobe. He was arrested without incident and charged with first-degree murder and kidnapping. When taken into custody, he was still carrying Gretchen's cell phone, the same one that had been sending those fake COVID messages for more than a week. Even after his arrest, David Anthony refused to come clean.
We gathered a lot of information that I'm sure you're not aware of. There was a neighbor
had heard the entire incident on Saturday morning at 6:30. Who lives across the way? I want you to think about that real quick. What incident? The incident that occurred at Gretchen's home.
Yeah, give me more information.
Detectives Kennerson and Sanderson confronted him with the surveillance footage that showed him attacking Gretchen. Still, he insisted 35 separate times that she was alive.
We have obtained enough evidence to obtain a warrant for your arrest for murder. Okay, I want you to understand that.
She's alive.
I want you to understand that. And what's most important to us right now is to find out where she is.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to tell you where she is.
Okay.
But I don't have that information. You have to ask her.
He spun new versions of the story. Gretchen had uncovered a fraud at her workplace, was being hunted, and had fled with him to El Paso before disappearing into hiding. He claimed she was alive, simply running from dangerous people.
There is a neighbor who observed her driveway covered in a bleach or cleaning product, drenched, coming out of the driveway, coming down the driveway and out of the garage.
What does that have to do with me?
You don't know anything about that?
That's why I'm asking you.
I saw your truck.
Were you at Gretchen's residence last Saturday? It's 6:30 in the morning.
She told me they stole my vehicle, so
I did. I'm asking you to be truthful with us.
This is like dealing with deep pockets here, you know. There's a lot more to this than just
deep pockets.
I love and care for her.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm going to protect her and her whereabouts because everyone can be bought. And as much as I know you guys are doing your job, I don't know. I've seen the other end of manipulation of information.
Yeah. So going back to Saturday morning, were you at her home Saturday morning?
You said you saw my vehicle there, so.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm asking
you. I understand what you're asking, yeah. But you, like I said, sheep in a narrative. So, you know, I'm husband and wife, so I can enact that right.
Okay.
But investigators weren't buying it. The evidence was overwhelming. The lies transparent.
Gretchen's home has cameras throughout it. Were you aware of that?
This is your first one knowledge.
The first time?
Mm-hmm.
First time.
Because they're in your car.
What are?
Her cameras.
They're mine.
So you're familiar with how Blink works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Blink is a web-based system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can destroy the cameras all you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still data and stored cloud storage from Blink. You understand that?
That's what you're telling me, so yeah.
Does that look like you?
Could be.
Okay, well, I'm going to explain to you right now. I'm going to tell you something right now, which is real life.
Mm-hmm.
So you were also there. There were cameras in the porch area of her home, which I told you captured not a pleasant interaction between you and Gretchen. That is you cleaning up her garage after there is a incident there.
So you see.
So I say. And here is a small photo of Gretchen with your face up here.
That doesn't look like Gretchen.
That doesn't look like Gretchen?
Gretchen's alive. I told you that already.
David, we know she's dead.
At one point, David claimed Gretchen had fled with him in her own car, hiding from dangerous people after exposing tax fraud. Detectives quickly dismantled the story using toll booth footage.
Well, she's still alive, so she doesn't have to worry about it.
What makes you think she's still alive? She's not on the SunPass video when she followed you. You have her phone. You sent the text messages. You planted her car at Jupiter Medical Center because you're on video doing it.
Detectives then showed a picture of Gretchen's body in a ploy to cut through David's denial.
Well, as soon as Gretchen finishes her whistleblower case...
Gretchen's not going to finish anything. Gretchen is dead.
And she's safe.
I showed you a picture of a dead woman's hairs. David, that's what it is. I'm telling you that right now. That's what it is.
Despite the overwhelming evidence, David denied any role in Gretchen's murder, insisting she was still alive. Detectives shifted tactics, appealing to his softer side by invoking Gretchen's daughter.
David, I'm going to play something for you. I need you to listen to it.
David, it's Ava. I love you. I'm scared. I miss my mom.
What
I need to know where my mom is. Please do the right thing and tell me where my mom is. Please,
mom.
I love you.
Yes, wait, mom. She doesn't have to see you as a monster. She will never see her mother again. Do her one last thing. Do Ava one last thing. Let us know where her mother is. You know in your heart that that was Ava on that recording?
The history belongs, Jerry.
Okay, David.
The interrogation went nowhere. Even with video proof of his crime, David stayed defiant, hiding behind lie after lie. Nothing broke his wall of denial.
I have the right to not say anything regarding her.
The wife that you guys are getting divorced and that you separated.
But we're
separated.
Not divorced. But we're not.
That's not what I said. I said getting divorced.
But we're not. So
and
I still have rights as a husband and wife.
And you were separated.
I still have rights as a husband and wife.
And you killed him.
And I've given you as much information as I have. I've been cooperative up to this point, and now you're trying to frame murder on me, so...
No, we're not framing.
No, you're getting charged.
You're
telling you.
You are.
You're charged.
We're telling everybody.
Fine.
No framing.
Okay.
No framing.
All right.
On March 14th, 2020, he was extradited to Florida, held without bond as prosecutors prepared their case. For months, one question haunted Gretchen's family, friends, and investigators. Where was her body? David had hidden her remains before fleeing across the country, and despite exhaustive searches, she was still missing. Then, in December 2020, with the evidence stacked against him and the threat of the death penalty looming, David Anthony made a deal that would finally bring some closure. On December 21st, 2020, he accepted a plea agreement. In exchange for leading investigators to Gretchen's body, his charges were reduced from first-degree murder to second-degree murder and kidnapping. That same day, detectives followed his directions to a wooded area behind a Walmart on Indian Town Road, just 3 miles from her home. Gretchen had been there all along, hidden in plain sight, while her loved ones searched in agony. The autopsy revealed the brutality of her final moments. She'd been stabbed multiple times in the neck and torso. Evidence showed she'd fought back, but David's attack was swift and merciless. On January 14th, 2021, 10 months after Gretchen's murder, David Anthony stood before a circuit judge to be sentenced. The courtroom was filled with Gretchen's family and friends, finally given the chance to confront the man who'd taken her from them. David wept as he addressed the court, blaming paranoia, greed, and addiction for what he called a heinous act. "I disgraced my family and brought shame upon my name," he said tearfully. But Gretchen's family had no interest in excuses. Her sister, Sarah Carey, faced him directly. "You are pure evil. You stole a mother away from her child, a daughter away from her mother. You are a monster. You killed Gretchen in the same garage where she saved your life," she said, referring to the time when a car had fallen on top of David in that very space, and Gretchen had nursed him back to health. "You are a monster." In the end, the judge handed down David's punishment, 38 years in prison. David Anthony thought a global pandemic would be the perfect cover for murder, but he underestimated something stronger than fear or isolation: the bond of genuine love. those closest to Gretchen knew her voice, her words, her patterns. They saw through the digital deception. And in the end, it wasn't technology or elaborate lies that unraveled David's plan. It was the people who truly knew her. Even in humanity's most isolated moment, love proved stronger than a lie. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.